Mental illness costs us up to $600 million a day, according to the Hot Off the Presses Productivity Commission report. It says early intervention must become a national priority and that schools should have a clear role in that. I'm sure schools are just crying out for extra responsibilities, but they also care deeply about their students' well-being. So, how should we make this happen? What staff and resources do schools need for their crucial role in supporting kids' mental well-being? Love it if you could let us know your ideas. Head to our Facebook page and pop them down there. It might look quite different depending where you live. Anne Hollins is with us. She's now the National Children's Commissioner. Anne, great to have you back on the program in this new role.
Oh, thank you, Hilary. Thanks. Great to be here.
Now, let's talk about the South Australian situation first. Children there have just learned they're not going to school for the next 6 days. They can't leave the house even for exercise. People are panic buying around them. What are some things that schools and parents and authorities can keep in mind when helping these children?
Well, look, it is obviously incredibly disruptive and a shock. And I can, you know, see from the media reports how shocked the adults are in Adelaide. And so kids will be affected by the anxiety of the adults around them. So the first thing is to really be mindful of your own reaction and to be reassuring the kids that, yes, this has had to happen. You know, we've had this virus this year, but this is all about making sure we can get back to normal life as quickly as we can. So it's about being reassuring and trying to be calm and also trying to put in place the things on a daily basis that make the kids feel comfortable and are able to continue their lives as much as possible.
And Anne, before you became the National Children's Commissioner, you were Director of the Australian Institute of Family Studies. What have you been hearing during this year about how COVID's been affecting children around the country?
Well, yes, it's been massive, hasn't it? And it's affected the adults and the kids in the family. But kids themselves have been saying that their mental health has been negatively affected. No surprises there. They've felt socially isolated. They've been worried about their education, about their futures. But they also are worried about their parents. They see their parents as stressed. They can see the worries about money, about losing the house, about having to move. All of those things are affecting how children are experiencing this really unusual year, and it just amplifies the sorts of issues that are in the Productivity Commission report, which we're discussing today, that COVID has really shone a very strong light on these issues which have pre-existed this year but are affecting some groups of kids more than others.
And the Commission report said that children's mental health should be a national priority. What's your response to that? Has it not been before?
Well, that's a really good question. I think that's just a remarkable thing. I think it's a wonderful recommendation But yes, you know, you've got to wonder why this has not been talked about before. And their recommendation that schools should prioritise the social and emotional well-being of kids. You know, I guess a lot of your listeners would have thought that they already were. But it just goes to show how siloed our policy and service systems have been, that schools have mainly focused on the academic stuff. And what this report does is it really draws in the fact that schools should also have as a key accountability the social and emotional well-being of their clients, which are the students.
And we'll look at that in a bit more detail in a few moments when we bring in our second guest. But I want to ask you a couple of other questions first, Anne Hollins. How critical is it that the mental health of children is attended to from a young age? What kind of costs do we see on a wider level if that doesn't happen?
Oh, well, look, I don't have the figures to hand, but we, as you said in your intro, I mean, the costs are massive that we're bearing now. And we also know that the longer we wait to react to problems like developing mental health issues, the costs just grow. So taxpayers should definitely have an interest in this, because we know now from research that if we get in early to prevent problems or to intervene early when the problems are at a lower level and intervene correctly based on evidence, then we're going to be saving an awful lot of money. And an important part of that when you're talking about kids is that it is the parents, the carers, the family as a whole, not just the children, because children are very much affected by the well-being of those who are trying to care for them. So we need that two-generational approach. Always have the adults who are caring for the kids in line of sight, as well as the children themselves, and from the earliest of ages. I mean, we really should be helping mums and dads when there's a pregnancy. We should already be reaching out to young parents before the child arrives, and then very, very closely all the way along to try and help them in whatever way they need at the right time, rather than making them wait or for the problems to languish until they've escalated to very severe levels.
Well, and you and the Productivity Commission are on the same page here, Anne Hollins. They say that early intervention is key. But when it comes to the nuts and bolts of that, are there enough qualified specialists around to do that, whether we're talking about in schools or outside?
Look, there's many issues to do with workforce. I believe that there are, and I haven't read all 2,000 pages of this report yet, but my understanding is that there is a shortage of appropriately qualified mental health professionals, and even then, there's even fewer psychologists and psychiatrists, for example, who are trained to work with children and families. And so really that prevention and early intervention does require a boost to the workforce. When we're talking about the schools, Hilary, a very important point here is that we don't want the teachers to have to become the mental health professionals. I think there is an opportunity here to integrate more across the health system and the education system and get them working better together and to boost the resources that way, rather than to ask schools to, and teachers in particular, to do more and more and more.
That is a key issue that we'll be addressing today. We're speaking with Anne Hollins, the National Children's Commissioner, and we'd love your thoughts on this issue too. What resourcing do you think schools would need for their crucial role in supporting kids' mental well-being, as the Productivity Commission has recommended? Head to our Facebook page and let us know whether you're a parent or grandparent or a teacher or someone who's just observed over the years the difference that really good support in schools can have. Marilyn Campbell is with us too. She's a professor in education at QUT and a spokesperson for Australian Psychologists and Counsellors in Schools. Marilyn, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you, Hilary.
Now, you've called for an urgent review of the school psychologist system in each state and territory and a national accreditation system too, and the Productivity Commission agreed with you on that. Why is that national accreditation system important? Is there some of this work being done at the moment by underqualified people?
There are people who are underqualified, as you said. One instance, of course, is the employment of chaplains in all schools. The barriers, I think, for schools really are these contradictory messages where sometimes the government actually says to schools, make sure that you've got the academics in place. NAPLAN is really important. We've got to get our scores up. Go back to the basics. And yet, on the other hand, as the Productivity Commission has said, mental health and well-being is just as important. And if you look at the science, without mental health and well-being, there is less academic achievement. So there's a big difficulty with a national approach because, of course, states are responsible for education. And even though there's the Australian Student Wellbeing Framework, it's not consistently applied in all states. And it's certainly not consistently applied for teacher education. And even though I agree with Anne that teachers should not be taking on more, they need to be aware and work with specialists.
And Marilyn, as you note, the Productivity Commission agrees with that idea. They said wellbeing should be placed on an even footing with academic progress and student engagement as an important goal. What do you think that might look like on the ground if that policy filtered down to school level? What might we see?
Well, first of all, when I was in the draft recommendations for the Productivity Commission, they had this idea of a mental health teacher who is at a kind of a deputy principal level. And we argued as an association that that was actually showing more stigma about mental health, because you didn't want to, or they were saying you didn't want to go to a counsellor, that students or teachers wouldn't talk to a counsellor. And especially if you use the word psychologists, because they have this understanding that psychologists seem to be all clinical psychologists, and they don't understand that the people in schools are educational and developmental psychologists. So I think that is, and obviously the Productivity Commission is reflecting the views of the public as well. And I think that the issue of stigma is going to be a very difficult problem for us to overcome in schools.
And Marilyn, what about the idea of the wellbeing coordinator? Some schools have that role, and in some schools it seems to be, you know, they keep the band-aids stocked and kind of have nice banners around the school occasionally, and in others it's a much more complicated role. What are your thoughts on kitting up that person to oversee the mental wellbeing of students?
Well, from my perspective, there are already a system of education developmental psychologists and school counsellors who are trained for prevention. And I believe that they are, the system's already in place, even though the courses for these people in universities are dwindling. There's only three left in Australia. But I believe that they are the people who can coordinate. They have the professional understanding. In many states, such as my state in Queensland, you have to be both a teacher and a psychologist or counsellor. So therefore, you've got kind of your foot in both camps to understand how to put those prevention of mental health, early intervention, and to coordinate teachers, to coordinate other specialists, and to really have that communion with the community where you actually have some credibility with those other specialists. And we've got to be able to all work together. You can't just say, this is the school and we're going to use all the resources, because most of those schools that have very well publicised wellbeing are, of course, independent private schools. And they have the resources to be able to do that. But when we look at disadvantaged schools who actually need those resources even more, then that's not where it's happening. And that's why we need more diverse counsellors. We need more Indigenous counsellors. We need more different ethnicities in counselling as well, as having this needs funding to actually have a wraparound school where you have people from the community who are trained to work with children in specialised ways, coming into the school and not leaving it just to the school to do.
We're speaking with Marilyn Campbell, Professor in Education at QUT, spokesperson for the Australian Psychologists and Counsellors in Schools, and Anne Hollands too, National Children's Commissioner. And this idea that Marilyn just mentioned of the wraparound school, would that deal with this tension for families as well as teachers between the pressure to succeed academically and the focus on the whole person that might prioritise a child's wellbeing? I mean, do you see examples of other places around the world where that works?
Well, yes. So you don't have to go further than the Nordic countries, which we often talk about, where not only are the educational standards very high, but also child wellbeing is prioritised at a policy level. And there, in those countries, the health services for the whole family are located within the primary school. And then as you go into high school, there are the specialists sort of, teenage health services, but also with a family focus in those schools. So they're integrated. So people don't have to go in and out. They're actually located in the school. And there is no shame or stigma in accessing those services. And the services are then able to provide a range of supports. They're able to screen for severe problems like domestic violence or child abuse or, adult mental health issues or whatever it is, and also have that view on how it's affecting the well-being and the mental health and the development of the child and young person. This makes an awful lot of sense to me because currently in Australia we have this very fragmented, siloed landscape where people themselves have to find the help, and the help is not always easy to find, and it's that extra step that you've got to take when you're already overwhelmed with the problems you are facing. If it's all happening within the school grounds, where as far as possible, then that makes it a lot easier. We're still building schools, Hilary, that are not integrating health services into them. So even on new sites, we're not doing it. So I think we need to take a long, hard look at how we integrate across those two major universal systems, which are health and education.
Marilyn Campbell, you talked earlier about the role that counsellors play in schools. Is there a clear understanding of what that role is on the part of school leadership? Is there a clear set of outcomes where everyone's heading in the same direction?
Unfortunately, because of the scarcity of school counsellors being in schools, what you have is that the principal of the school, because of our system in Australia, where we have the one person does everything, so we don't divide into assessment for learning difficulties and funding, and also mental health, career counselling. One person does all of it in Australia. Therefore, there aren't enough people to do all those three jobs. And what happens is that principals actually ask the school counsellor, who is under their authority, to assess children for learning difficulties and disability for funding. Now, that's an important job, but that always seems to take priority over mental health and especially over prevention, so that it's only a reactive service because of the limited time that psychologists and counsellors have in schools, and what the priorities of principals are is to get more money for funding for children who have learning difficulties.
And Marilyn, what do you see as the top priorities? What would you like to see change as a result of this Productivity Commission report?
I believe that the system of having the psychologists and counsellors in schools is already there. If we could just bolster that, if we could bolster the university training, so we have more than three programs in Australia for people to actually be educational developmental psychologists, and that we actually employ sufficient of them in the schools for them to be able to do all three jobs and do them well. We know that the science says unless you take care of the well-being of the students, they're not going to have that academic success. In fact, well-being should be prioritised over academia, because if you don't have that, you don't get the academic success. But I don't actually think that that is a widespread understanding amongst school principals.
Yes, that sounds like a hard sell on the policy level. It's been really fascinating to chat to you both today. Thank you so much for your time here on Life Matters.
Thanks,
my pleasure.
Marilyn Campbell, Professor of Education at QUT and spokesperson for the Australian Psychologists and Counsellors in Schools, and Anne Hollands, National Children's Commissioner. And if this story has raised any issues for you and you'd like to talk them through, Lifeline is always there. Their number's 13 11 14. And for young people, the Kids Helpline, 1800 55 1800.